Sedasky, Atari 8-Bit Productivity Podcast, Season 1, Episode 10.
Hello again and welcome back. I'm your host Wade, and this episode I'll be taking you on a tour of Atari stock charting. But first, I have some important news. As you probably have figured out, this is Episode 10, another milestone. So far, I've had a lot of fun doing this, and the feedback that I've received has kept me going. And I plan on doing a lot more of these, so stay tuned. Okay, so as I stated, this episode features Atari stock charting. Atari stock charting was designed to track closing stock prices and graph performance over time. It's pretty simple. This was developed by Control Data Corporation. First, I want to give you a little background on Control Data Corporation. Control Data Corporation, or CDC, was a supercomputer firm founded in 1957. CDC was one of the nine major United States computer companies through most of the 1960s. The others were IBM, Burroughs Corporation, DEC, NCR, General Electric, Honeywell, RCA, and UNIVAC. CDC was well known and highly regarded throughout the industry at the time. For most of the 1960s, Seymour Cray worked at CDC and developed a series of machines that were the fastest computers in the world by far. CDC only lost that title in the 1970s after Cray left the company to found, you guessed it, Cray Research, or CRI. After several years of losses in the early 1980s, CDC made the decision to leave the computer manufacturing business and sell those parts of the company in 1988. A process that was completed in 1992 with the creation of Control Data Systems Incorporated. The remaining businesses of CDC currently operate as Ceridian. Now, Ceridian is a provider of human resource software and services with employees in the United States, Canada, Europe, and Mauritius. It was a publicly traded company on the New York Stock Exchange until it was acquired in 2007 by Thomas H. Lee Partners and Fidelity National Financial. So, not much like the original company it was, similar to another company we all know and love, or used to love. Okay, enough with the history lesson, and let's get on to Atari stock charting. Now, prior to this episode, there were no copies of Atari stock charting in the wild. So just to let you know, I am providing a copy to Atari Mania and Kevin Savitz for archiving. I'll also try and make sure that it get up to archive.org as well. You can already see the box and the manual scans I provided to Atari Mania, and these are also available on the Inversitaski website.
Technical data.
Atari stock charting was released in 1980. It was published by Atari, and the developer, as already stated, was Control Data Corporation. I don't know who the original programmer is, though, and the source code has no indication. It was distributed on disk. It required the basic cartridge and 24K of memory. The part number was CX8108. The price was $24.95, which in today's dollars is $75.81. And Atari Mania has it listed as a rarity of 8. The manual is a whole 10 pages long, but it does have nice clear color screenshots. And pretty much tells you exactly how to use the program. I didn't have any problems understanding it at all.
Usage notes.
I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on the screen display because there's really not a lot to talk about. You have a menu, you have instruction screens, and you have input screens. For each of the displays, you must press return to continue. You can press P to print each display as well. Oddly, this includes the two disk swap screens, however, not the graphing screen, which is understandable since it doesn't print true graphics. And when you return to the main menu, you must sit through the credits and the menu instructions each time. And here are a few general notes before we get down into the menu. Ticker symbols are limited to 4 characters. The portfolio can consist of up to 50 different stocks. Each module gives you a chance to see the portfolio at the start of the module. Lowercase letters are not allowed, And don't press the break key or you'll jump out of the program to the basic prompt and the data you've entered in the module won't be saved. So I've run into several programs so far that allow the break key to function, and I'm not sure why they would have let that fly when it's so easy to trap it and make sure that it doesn't function. Seems like that would have been the smartest thing to do to keep people from breaking out of the program, either on purpose or on accident. So hopefully you can't hear that, but there's a dog barking now, and I'm not going to wait around for it to finish because who knows how long that will be. Now let's talk about the menu, or as they call it, the directive menu. It has six different functions, one of which is exit. So the first one, A, is define or revise a stock definition in the portfolio. Before you start, you need to gather the following at a minimum, the name or ticker symbol. Optionally, you can gather the earnings and dividends for the last 4 quarters, but without these, the price and earning ratios and yield won't be calculated. When entering the data, you're going to enter it in the following format, with each entry separated by a comma or a space. Symbol, earnings, 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 dividend, 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 dividend. You'll do those in oldest quarter to newest quarter, and any that are missing will be filled in with a zero in case you have a dividend but no earnings or you're just missing quarters. The earnings and dividend data can be collected from the appropriate exchange, such as NASDAQ.com. It doesn't matter what order you enter them, the program will alphabetize them when it's done. Menu item B, enter closing quotes for a stock in portfolio. Before you get started here, you'll need to do some research. You need to gather the following, the name or the ticker symbol, the daily volume, and the closing quotes, both highs and lows, for all of the days that you're ready to enter. So the first thing you do will be enter the trading date. The oldest date allowed is 1950. I'll discuss this later in the limitations segment of the show. The date that you enter here will be used in case you don't enter a date on the subsequent input screens. Inputting the data is where your research pays off. You need the volume in hundreds, so take the volume and divide it by 100. The high dollar, the low dollar, and the closing dollar. And I think I forgot to mention that as being one of the research items, but you do need the closing dollar as well. The data is entered in the following format, which is also comma or space delimited. Date, which is optional. If you skip it, the date that you entered at the beginning will be used. The symbol, the volume, the high, the low, and the close. For the prices, interestingly enough, fractional input is allowed. So you can enter like 1 7/8. The volume is limited to 99,999. Prices are limited to 999. Later in the show's limitations segment, I'll discuss this again in more detail. When entering data, it's best to enter a week's worth of data at a time or more, because each time you write to the data files, it consumes 1% of the disk space, or so say the manual. Menu item C. List closing quotes for a stock and portfolio. For this, at a bare minimum, you need the symbol. An optional start and end date can be input as well. And when choosing to print what you see, it will only print what's on the current screen. There is no programmatic way to print all the quotes for a stock. So 18 lines is all you get per page, even if you have 90 quote entries. Did I mention this is episode 10? Woohoo! Menu item D, delete stock and closing quotes from portfolio. Yeah, there's not a whole lot to say here. You need the ticker symbol, obviously. You input it, it's removed, and the updated portfolio is displayed on the screen. Then, when you press return, you are returned to the main menu. Menu item E, graph stock closing quotes. This is the meat and potatoes of the program, and basically what everybody would be interested in. That's right. Nice colorful graphs. So the screen here is broken into two parts. The upper part is a graphic display where the actual graph is created, and the bottom part is a four-row text display where it shows your dividend and interest. Now, in the text window, if a value can't be calculated, NMF will be displayed, and that stands for no meaningful data. And in the top part where the graph is, there are room for 120 different days of data. The upper graph is broken into three sections. At the top, you have a 6-day oscillator in blue. In the middle, you have the high and low range in black. Also in the middle is a 10-day moving average, which is in red. And at the bottom, you have the volume in black. When you start this item, you'll be asked for the ticker symbol and a start and end date. And again, the dates are optional. After the graph is displayed, you press Enter, then return back to the input screen. The screen color is defaulted back to the standard Atari colors at this point. Returning you to the input section allows you to plot a graph for another stock. So one note for the graphs. With very high volumes, like today's trading volumes, the volume charts will exceed the display, making the chart somewhat useless, since it will be completely black. The program was designed for 1980 trading volumes and is geared towards volumes in the tens of thousands, but today's trading volumes can easily reach tens of millions. More on this in the limitations segment of the show. And menu item F, exit. This does what you think. It exits to basic. Now I'll talk briefly about the files. Atari Stock Charting came with two disks, program disk and a blank data disk. The program disk has DOS 2.0s, and the data disk is formatted with the same. On the program disk, in addition to the DOS files, there are six other files, which are the programs. The first, stock, is the directive menu. This is hard-coded to run function programs from D1. The second is STK-DEF-11. This equates to directive A, add stock to portfolio. The third is STK-TR-19, which equates to directive B, enter quote data. The fourth, STK-L7, equates to directive C, or list quote data. The fifth, STK-DEL4, equates to directive D, delete stock from portfolio. And number six is STK-PL15, which equates to directive E, graph the stock. After you've created data and stored it on your data disk, there will be two files. The first is portfolio, spelled PRTFOLIO, and the second is symbol. The symbol file isn't actually symbol. It is the ticker symbol for each stock, so there will be multiple files, one for each stock. Now, these are ASCII files, and dates in them are converted to 5-digit numbers, for example, 1-13-87 for January 13, 1987, becomes 13527. I didn't bother to decode that, but that's what they do. All the numeric data shows up as numeric data. While I'm talking about files, there are a couple of things I neglected to mention earlier. When you're inputting data, it's saved to the file every 50 entries, and the program monitors the disk utilization, and so it will give you a warning when it starts to become full. Now let's talk a little bit about the limitations, the first of which is going to be dates. I already stated this once, but the oldest date you can enter is 1950, and the program is hard-coded to use 1900, so you must use a day-compatible year. For example, 2015, a day-compatible year would be 1987. This is the only way to overcome the date in this particular program, as 1900 is used in calculations in various parts. So by using a day-compatible year, it will at least work for the next 12 years if you start with 1987 for 2015. All right, in Module B, the stock tracking, where you input the stock quotes, there is a limit on the share volume at 99,999, which makes it incapable of supporting today's trading patterns. The good news is there's a relatively easy fix. Make the changes described on the Inverse Atascii website. This will work for volumes up to 99,999,999. Now, if you remember, I said you had to enter in the share volumes in hundreds, which is in essence dividing the volume by 100. So for 53,462,138, you would enter 534,621. Module C, stock listing. With the large trading volumes again, there is another fix. Listings will have the date butt up against the volume if the volume is 6 digits, and this is fixed by altering a single line in program STK L7. Again, make the changes described on the InversaTASKI website. This will, in essence, move that first column over by one, allowing a space to be inserted so that the data doesn't butt up against each other.
Nice butt!
Module E, graphing. Trying to graph with today's trading volume results in a large black box because the values shoot off the chart. There are only 76 y-axis plot points available. I was able to work around the problem by modifying the code yet again. Program plots the share volume across the entire y-axis if needed. This time, I take the share volume and further divide it by 100, then multiply it by 0.0025 so the volume plots appear in the lowest part of the graph's y-axis. So that's it for the limitations, and to go along with them, I fixed the boot logo and added a credit to the splash screen. These changes are documented on the InversaTASKI website, and I've also included a copy of this program for archiving. So both the original version and my updated version should be available.
Summary.
This is one of the better programs I've seen that's been written in BASIC. The errors are handled well, but just don't press break. Again, I'm not sure why Atari didn't trap that. Seems like a fairly simple thing to do. But overall, it does what it sets out to do, and it does it fairly well. Ah, the dreaded complaints. First, when entering date ranges in Module B, or Menu Item B, you must have a start date that matches at least one record, or else no records are displayed. No match is required for the end date, however. So this makes it hard to see all entries for a given range unless you know at least one entry in the range that you want to see. This doesn't happen in Module E, which is the graphing module. 2. You have to enter quote data in chronological order, so you can't enter older data should you decide to. 3. I found absolutely no way to edit or remove invalid daily quote data. If you notice a mistake, you must go back to B and re-enter it per the manual, but I could never figure out exactly how to make that work. And what did I really like about it? Well, there wasn't a whole lot that came out and grabbed me, but it was pretty easy to use, and the graphs did look pretty nice once I got them to work correctly. So I jumped in the Wayback Machine, and it's 1980. Would I use this? Sure, I would use it. In 1980, there were no others. From a retro perspective, would I use it? Maybe. In the absence of other stock charting software, this does what it sets out to do, so it would be useful. If there is one with better editing capabilities, I would choose that instead, though. If you are truly only using a vintage computer, then you won't mind keying the data in daily or weekly. If you are multi-platforming, however, you may want to export the data and import it, but there's no way to import or even download quotes with Atari stock charting. Bummer. What year did CSV become common? I'll have to look that up. Overall, I'm going to give this a bit rating of 6, mainly due to the editing abilities, or lack thereof.
Fun facts.
Okay, here are some interesting facts. Number 1. Section 7 of the manual reads as a disclaimer, stating that the program should not be used as an investment guide, urging you to interpret its results. Number 2. There is a listing of investment services in the back of the manual. Number 3. Included with the program disk is an additional blank disk, which I've already mentioned. And number 4. Also included is a sheet of disk labels and write protect tabs.
Listener feedback.
Okay, now I have some feedback, some news, and an announcement. Not necessarily in that order. We'll start with the announcement. InversaTASKI now has 50 followers on Twitter.
Excellent!
Now there are two items of news I want to discuss. The first is a notice from Bill Kendrick, and if you don't already know, the Atari Party 2015 is being held on May 2nd from noon to 5 p.m. The venue is the Yolo County Public Library, the Mary L. Stevens Davis Branch in Davis, California. Bill Kendrick has done a great job organizing this in the past, and I'm sure he'll be doing it again this year. If you are in the area on that date, do stop by, or better yet, plan a trip if you can swing it. For more information, see the official webpage at newbreedsoftware.com/AtariParty/2015. It sounds like a lot of fun, and I wish I could make it there, but unfortunately I cannot due to the next piece of news. VCF Southeast 3.0, or Vintage Computer Festival Southeast 3.0, is being held in Roswell, Georgia, on Saturday and Sunday, May 2nd and 3rd, at the King's Market Shopping Center. I will be at this one. This festival features over 35,000 square feet of displays and exhibits and interactive entertainment. And of note, this year, the PDP-8 turns 50, the Altair 8800 turns 40, and the Amiga 1000 turns 30. There'll be celebrations of each. And again, if you're in the area, stop by and check it out, or plan a trip there, because I'm sure it'll be fun for everybody. For more information on this show, visit vcfse.org. And last but not least, feedback from listeners. I received an email from Alan, one of the curators at Atari Mania. Alan says, "Just about finished listening to the Family Finances podcast. Great job, I love it. I spend most of my free time scanning and archiving as much Atari 8-bit software as I can, so I don't usually stop to really look at individual programs. Your podcast makes it a lot easier to discover more of this great software, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Please keep up your fantastic work, Alan." While I'm not sure my work is fantastic, I do appreciate the email, and thanks for writing in. And I'm also glad that you're enjoying the podcast.
Special thanks.
I'd like to thank WizWars for distributing the chiptune 8-bit Raceway in such a fashion and with such a license to allow the inclusion in this podcast as part of the intro. I'd also like to thank all the listeners for continuing to listen to me rant about old software that really has no meaning anymore, and all the support on Facebook and Twitter that I'm getting as well. Thank you, all. And if you haven't taken the time, please go out to iTunes and give me a rating, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. It will help other people with similar interest as your own find me.
Contact information.
The show notes can be found on inverseataski.info. It can be found on iTunes using the search term Ataski or Atari. It can be found on Facebook at facebook.com/inverseataski. And you can also follow on Twitter with @inverseataski. To leave comments or suggestions, you can email wade@inverseataski.info or inverseataski@icloud.com. And inverseataski can also be found on Stitcher. As always, thanks for listening and stay tuned for the next episode. Progmatic, 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 progmatic. We'll go with progmatic. If you're using multi-platforming,
Goodbye.